When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs from the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Mr. Brian Reese.
Hi, Paul. Happy autumn.
Happy autumn to you as well, and it's good to have you back.
It's good to be back.
Okay. To the folks listening at home, we had to delay recording. That's why we're off schedule, thanks to Brian. He wanted to go off and have a life and all that.
A little fun down Mississippi way.
Yeah. Do you want to tell people what you did?
I went to the Deep Blues Festival in Clarksdale, Mississippi, the birthplace of the blues. And stayed in a shack at the world famous Shack Up Inn.
Good time. Very nice. Very nice.
Yes. It's the world's first beer and breakfast.
Beer in bed.
Yes. Beer in bed.
Beer and breakfast. That's excellent.
So,
It's good to have you back, and we can get back to doing important things like podcasting.
The world loves a podcast.
Okay. So today on the program, we'll be discussing Terminal City, the acclaimed Eisner-winning comic by Dean Motter and illustrated by Michael Lark. But before we do that, let's talk about a couple of minor things that have happened in the world of comics. Now, typically, this is something we don't normally do, which is to talk about trailers to upcoming comic book movies, but there have been three pretty interesting ones that came out recently, and they warrant at least a brief mention. And they are Black Panther, New Mutants, and Justice League. You have seen these, correct, Brian?
I have seen all three.
All right. Well, let's start with Black Panther. What were your thoughts?
Let us start with Black Panther.
What are your thoughts on the Black Panther trailer? This is the second one, by the way.
Yes, the second one. My thoughts on the matter are, holy shit. Am I allowed to say that?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Holy shit, good?
Holy shit, good.
Yeah, I think it looks pretty darn awesome.
It looks amazing. Now, realizing that a trailer, they're going to show you their good stuff. But my goodness.
Just the whole futuristic look of Wakanda and just everything about it. The entire look of it is stunning.
Yes. Yeah. And the cast.
Oh, yeah.
The cast is amazing.
Top to bottom. Yeah, I mean, even the minor characters are great, great actors and actresses.
And as you know, Paul, I am not as big of a comic book movie guy. I enjoy them. I will watch them when I watch them, usually, sometimes in the theater. But I don't really base my schedule around whatever the latest comic book movie is in terms of must-see now. But I haven't been this excited about a comic book movie since Doctor Strange. And I'm trying to remember maybe the Batman films before that, where I've actually been that enthused. Now, Black Panther is a character that I really, really like, in the same way Doctor Strange is a character that I really, really like. So that helps.
Yeah.
But just watching the trailer, and again, a trailer is a trailer. They're trying to sell us on the movie, but kudos, because they sold me on the movie. This is a movie that I will attempt to see within the first week of it coming out.
Oh, good. I will as well. I think I'm going to be there, probably not opening day, but somewhere near about.
Go ahead.
I was going to say my only qualm about this seems to be that it's that typical Marvel by the numbers formula, where at the end they have to fight an equal but opposite villain.
Sure.
And, you know, I was hoping they'd do something a little bit different. And maybe they will. Who knows? You know, they've been shaking things up in the Marvel Universe for a little while.
Well, and I think that Black Panther is a unique enough character that let's hope. I'm not sure. Do you know who's directing it? I don't off the top of my head know who is directing it.
I did know about an hour ago.
It's not really important. It's not like it's Scorsese, you know. We're not talking, you know, Oscar winning director, I don't think. You know, if they give the director enough room, you know, if they slack the rope enough, Hopefully, he or she is able to imprint like a unique stamp on it that doesn't just say, "Oh, look, I'm another Marvel movie."
No, I just looked this up. It's Ryan Coogler.
Okay,
who did Creed and Fruitvale Station?
Right, right.
So he's a very innovative young director.
Excellent.
Yeah, which is where Marvel seems to be going that direction to more. To younger, more innovative directors. So I hope that continues.
Which is the exact opposite of what they're doing in their publishing realm.
Yes, indeed.
Too soon?
Don't be a hater, man. Okay, but we're both on board for Black Panther.
We're both on board for Black Panther. The trailer looks great. If you haven't, anybody listen, if you haven't seen the trailer yet, for the love of Pete, go see the trailer.
Yeah, it looks really, really good. Well, let's move on to the next one, which is New Mutants. Now,
oh shoot! I had something else to say about the trailer.
Oh, go back. We can do that
because I wanted to talk because there's something about all three trailers that I want to address.
Okay.
Is it too late?
No, it's not too late at all. This is our show. We can do anything we want.
That's right. Okay. So, real quick, though, one of the other things I want to say about the trailer, and I want to say this about all three of the trailers, is obviously music makes a big difference in the trailer. You always get some song that's going mm-hmm. to like catch in people's ears. They're going to like identify the song with the trailer with the song, what have you. And for Black Panther, their use of Gil Scott Heron's "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised" was awesome.
Yes,
and I just have to put that in there because it's. The perfect song, and it's also a nice little let's just say a bit of a political jab as well. So I thought that if you're gonna pick a song and you're gonna do Black Panther and you do Gil Scott Heron's "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised," whoever did that deserves a raise.
Yeah, and the way it was mashed up with the and I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the other song. That was just excellent.
Right.
So let's move on to New Mutants now. Well, I'll let you go first. What did you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's the first trailer. Am I correct? I think it's the first trailer.
I think it's just even
really
a teaser.
Really a very kind of generic tease. You know, Pink Floyd's The Wall is the music playing. Again, addressing the music. Some jump cuts. It looks like a horror film.
That's exactly what they're going for. They've actually said this is going to be a horror film. With the super, because they're going to do Demon Bear, the Demon Bear run of New Mutants.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever read that, but it's
yes.
It's one of the more classic
yes.
runs of theirs.
It looked sort of generic horror movie. It, all the kind of tropes were there. Young people running from things or being scared by things.
And, yes, and faces being pressed through walls.
Yes. Yeah. So. The film, it could be a good film. I don't know. This is all we've seen of it. But the trailer for New Mutants did virtually nothing to get me to see it.
Yeah. Well, I actually like the fact that the new trend in comic book movies is to embrace some of the subgenres and show all the different things they can do. Like the way Logan was sort of a modern Western. Yeah, so I really like, and the way Thor Ragnarok coming up looks like it's just going to be this psychedelic 80s thing.
Right.
So, I like the fact that they're doing these new, taking it in new directions and trying new things with the genre. That I think that's really cool. However, this is basically an X-Men film from Fox.
Right.
And they're really hit or miss. You know, there's been some good things, but there's been some not so good things from that franchise. So I really don't know. This one I'm just going to keep open-ended and say, maybe it'll be good.
Yeah, there's just not enough to it yet.
Right.
You know, when we get that long 3-minute or 4-minute trailer.
Well, it's got Maisie Williams in it, so you can't go wrong with Aria.
Right.
All right, so let's move on to Justice League. What do you think?
Your thoughts, Paul? Oh,
you want to go with me?
Sure, you start it.
I think it looks really good. It's very Zack Snyder-y still, even though Whedon has taken over some of the reins.
It's still got those kind of washed out colors.
It's still blue and gray.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, overall, it does seem to have some more humor in it. It does sort of have camaraderie between characters, which is something that's been lacking.
Jason Momoa looks like a heck of a lot of fun as Aquaman.
I know. I don't know if I don't know. I'm not sold on him yet, but he does seem fun.
Yes.
That's true. The whole, you know, my man. I did watch this and got somewhat excited about it, but I've been burned by these movies before.
Yes.
I mean, I remember seeing the first trailer for Batman v Superman and thought, oh, this is awesome. It's going to be so great.
And then we all saw it.
Yeah, the actual product was, it was all right. Actually, it wasn't even all right. I'm still waiting to see a good Superman movie. And again, neither here nor there. Well, so I don't know what to do.
But Paul, Superman's not in this, remember? See, there's no Superman in this movie because
he's
dead, right? And so it's just not possible that Superman could possibly be in this movie because he's not even in the trailer, right, Paul? So I don't know where you get the whole like Superman movie thing coming from here.
They've already announced that he's in it.
I know, of course. Yeah. Of course he's in it.
Haven't you heard the mustache? The mustache controversy?
Oh, yeah, they had to airbrush out the mustache.
They're digitally removing his mustache for all the reshoots. That's going to be one of the most expensive mustaches in history.
And also one of the worst kept, secrets in terms of, is Superman going to be in Justice League? Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I mean, the very end of Batman v Superman had him essentially rising from the grave. Mm-hmm. They couldn't even keep that secret.
No. But I thought the trailer was, because I checked the time halfway through it, because I thought this seems to be going on a bit. And yeah, it was over 8 minutes. And I sort of felt like, well, I think I've just seen the entire film.
Yeah. Someone online did a supercut of all the different trailers and material that they've released so far. And it's like a 30-minute video.
Gee whiz. So, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Leave nothing to the imagination.
Well, and I thought they kind of, now the film, it looks great. I agree with you. It looks great. It looks exciting. It may get me into the theater again within like the first couple weeks. But I feel like they gave too much away. I mean, we get the whole first meetings of everybody in this trailer. And it just seemed really strange to me that they gave so much away in such a long trailer.
But that's not uncommon. To the point where
I actually know, I don't know if the big bad has been announced yet, but I know who it is based on...
Well, it's Steppenwolf. They've already done that. Okay. And then it's going to be the introduction of Darkseid.
Well, it was Darkseid was what I was going with, because they're the parademons. They're fighting the parademons in the trailer. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, there's a shocker.
Yeah, well, to be fair, they already did announce who the big bad was. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, as disparaging as I've been to Zack Snyder, his films do look great. That is...
They do.
Something universal, you know, universal to him. It's just, you know, the telling of a story that he seems to fall down on. So anyway, I don't know. I'll see it. But I'm very hesitant in my enthusiasm.
Well, because as you said before, we've been burned.
Yes.
And burned badly. And my concern with the film, of course, is I hope it doesn't squander all the goodwill from Wonder Woman.
Well, you know, the trailer does seem to imply that they've put Wonder Woman in the in a more primary role, as if she's the leader.
As she should be.
Yes, indeed. But it seems as if they're with the success of Wonder Woman, they're sort of retooling how they're doing things and putting her front and center, which is a good thing to do.
It's a smart move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she is one of the big three, technically. I mean, you know, when they, you know, I'm saying nothing new here. When we talk about the Trinity in DC, right, we're talking Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. It is a deserved place, and she should be treated with that deference as well, I think, in the film. So I hope they do keep with that.
Yeah, like she's a deity or something.
Yeah, she's one of the most powerful beings in the DC universe.
Indeed. So as an aside, what you were saying about how long that trailer was, there has been a second trailer for Thor Ragnarok that was released.
Okay.
I personally am not going to watch it. It's just a thing. I'll watch the first one, but from there on in, I just don't want to watch anything else. And I try to steer clear of, I basically go dark until the movie actually comes out.
Okay.
So that's why I don't want to talk about it here, other than to just mention, I'm not going to talk about it.
I'm glad we were able to clear that up.
Well, no, because apparently that one's pretty long and it does give away spoilers. So although why go
gives,
there?
Although if the trailer gives them away, are they spoilers anymore?
Oh, that's a tough call. Like, but you haven't seen Spider-Man
yet. If a spoiler falls in the woods,
Right. But you haven't seen Spider-Man yet, right? Homecoming?
No, I have not seen Spider-Man.
All right. Well, I'm not giving anything away here because it's actually in the trailer. But in the beginning of the film, Spider-Man deals with Iron Man. But then you find out that the suit's just empty and Tony Stark is somewhere else. He's like on vacation.
Having a few drinks.
Yeah, and that kind of pisses Peter off that he's not really a priority. And then later in the movie, you see Iron Man again, and Peter just says to the suit, you know, like, you don't even care. You're not even here. And the suit opens up and Tony Stark walks out. That could have been a powerful moment, except it's in the trailer. So you know it's going to happen.
Right.
And that's what I mean. Don't do that. Figure out what the powerful moments are in your movie and don't give them away.
They can't help themselves.
I know. All right. Well, so those are our feelings on the latest trailers and the movies coming out. There's going to be 8 superhero movies released in 2018.
Oh, good. I'm glad they're not oversaturating the market.
But there's going to be like Incredibles 2.
Are you counting that?
Yeah, I'm counting that. It's the best Fantastic Four movie ever made.
Especially in light of recent Fantastic Four movies.
Exactly.
That's weird because I don't really count The Incredibles as a superhero movie in the same way that I guess when we think of, I mean, I love The Incredibles. The Incredibles is like a phenomenal film. And of course, I'm excited about Incredibles 2. So sure. Okay. We'll count it as a superhero film.
Yes. It's definitely a superhero film.
They are a superhero family.
That's right. It follows all the superhero tropes and it's a superhero film.
Okay.
We're keeping it there, but let's move on. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about Terminal City.
Excellent.
This is an imaginary podcast, which may never have happened.
The Short Box Showcase.
But then again, may have. About a father and daughter. I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Emily.
Who came from Ohio and talked about comics.
Identity Crisis.
Lone Wolf and Cub.
Hergé's Tintin.
White Tiger. It tells of their rise to glory. When the great guests were yet to be booked.
I didn't know this was going to be the Jimmy Olsen Hate Podcast.
It's always the Jimmy Olsen Hate Podcast.
And the great feats of editing not yet performed.
Ultraman, this is Ultra 7, this is Ultraman Jack, and this is Ultraman Taro, and this is Ultraman Leo, and this
of how they spoke at length. When I read a comic, story comes first and art comes second.
Continuity is really the brainchild of nitpicking nerds the world over.
Those are our people, Emily. And reviewed in brief tales that explore creatively the bounds of a given character's history.
Superman has basically the same relationship with Wonder Woman that he has with Batman.
Of brilliant creators before their fall from grace, this is the era where Miller is at the height of his creative and artistic powers, and the ability of strong writing to encapsulate and transcend its time.
Flash of Two Earths by Gardner Fox.
This is an imaginary podcast. Aren't they all? Shortbox Showcase is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Check us out on the web at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or search in iTunes for Relatively Geeky or Shortbox Showcase. And remember, we're not experts.
We're just family.
And we're back. Now, today on the program, we'll be discussing Terminal City by Dean Motter and Michael Lark. Brian, this is your recommendation, so I hand it over to you.
It is my recommendation by Cracky. So,
I thought it was by Dean Motter.
Hey-o. We'll get to the puns later.
There's one or two.
Yeah, one or two. It's part of why I picked this. I thought you might enjoy, because you had not read this prior to my recommendation, had you?
I had not. This is a comic that I've always been aware of, and it's always been, you know, something I've intended to get around to, but this allowed me to actually, if nothing else, this podcast will get me to read all my back issues that I've been meaning to do for years.
Yes, all your back issues.
Yes.
I have back issues.
It's very hard to stand up sometimes.
Yeah, I'm a stand-up guy.
So, back to the podcast.
To start off with, I should clarify that Terminal City is, if not my favorite comic of all time, it is certainly top 5. And there are many reasons for that, which we'll touch on here. But let me go into the prepared bit before we discuss and continue further on the actual comic. Terminal City is a 9-issue limited series originally published by Vertigo Comics in 1996 through 1997. It's written by Dean Motter of Mr. X fame and illustrated by a nascent Michael Lark, who has gone on to do great work on titles like Gotham Central and Lazarus. Terminal City plays on a retro-futuristic noir style with copious pulp and hard-boiled tropes and themes, juxtaposed against technological wonderment. Full of puns and literary elements and cameos, the series plays upon the classic crime drama while simultaneously giving a tip of the fedora to classic comedies like the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges. Most importantly, it references films such as Grand Hotel and Casablanca, since the comic centers around the Herculean Arms, a larger-than-life hotel full of seedy, mysterious characters, wealthy travelers, vixens, gangsters, spies, and exotic dignitaries. A literal cast of hundreds inherit these pages. The Herculean Arms and the city itself are characters onto themselves, wonderfully realized by Lark's art. The focus of the series centers around the building-climbing, tightrope-walking Cosmo Quinn, once known as the Human Fly, who, disgraced, now spends his days putting his skills to use cleaning the windows of the stunning architecture of Terminal City. Spinning out of Cosmo are an array of characters and acquaintances. Former lover Charity Ball, Jezebel, the mysterious lady in red, Captain Habib, the nefarious brothers Mikasa and Tsukasa, Lady Debussy Fields and her paramour Lance Boyle, Monty Vickers the Explorer, gangsta Little Big Lil, Mayor Huxley, Bonnie Bergman, Kid Gloves, and too many more to name in an intro. The overriding plot revolves around a mysterious briefcase handcuffed to a stranger with amnesia that many suspect contains the missing jewels of Alakazar. Much plotting, kidnapping, murder, and intrigue ensues. Smaller plots, which come and go with varying resolution, include a boxing match against the stages of evolution, Captain Habib's obsessive quest to capture his white whale, Little Big Lil, Valet Manuel's unrequited love for Jezebel, Charity Ball's gambling addiction, the literal question of art, the plight of Mayor Huxley, shady dealings at Promethean, the consequences of the Brave New World's Fair, who is the lady in red, and so much more. The ending has its satisfactions, but leaves one wanting more. This was followed by a second 5-issue series, Aerial Graffiti. Motter has stated he has more stories to tell, and here's hoping he'll someday have the opportunity to revisit. And there we are. The great thing about Terminal City, and the most difficult thing about Terminal City, is to take the complexity of what Motter has crafted and the whole world building that he has done in this weird futuristic Art Deco city and all of these incredible characters that he has written with such skill, even with the tiniest, you know, the seemingly most irrelevant characters, he's imbued them with uniqueness and sort of great humanity, whether it be good humanity or bad humanity. And he has thrown all this into like a 9-issue series that is almost impossible to contain all of the ideas that he has sort of created within this world.
Yeah. I agree. There's so many plots and subplots going on, and Motter seems to be able to juggle them all expertly. He never lets one get too far out of mind before he brings it back. And everything seems to be vital to the overall story. Even the side plots have, you know, emotional consequences to the main characters. So it's
relevant to the, I don't want to give too much away because I feel like we're covering something that maybe some of the stuff we talk about, a lot of people have read, you know, the Judas Contract, things like that. But Terminal City probably isn't as well read. So I don't want to give too much away, but I think it would be fair to say that it's astonishing that there is not a character in this whose name is Red Herring.
Yeah.
Because I think there are plenty of other characters with similar names, but there is a lot of Red Herring in this, and it's part of the fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that plays into a lot of these old, you know, 30s and 40s style stories, where there would be little subplots that really weren't going anywhere, but they were just sort of there for comedic effect or to maybe push the plot forward in a slight, you know, sideways way.
Right.
So, I mean, Motter knows his stuff. He knows the era, he knows the genres, he knows all the literary terms to use, and he doesn't hold back. He throws everything in there.
Yeah. But he does it well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It would be very easy in lesser hands for anything in this, including the puns, of which there are many, including the hilarious names that he gives people. In lesser hands, it would all be gimmick.
Right.
But this is not gimmick.
Yeah, I think he does this, you know, there are so many nods to other works and literary characters, and there's Melville and Aldous Huxley and Casablanca, Three Stooges, like you mentioned. And some of these are overt, but some of them are very subtle.
Right.
But so much is packed in from old pulp tropes and 30s and 40s cinema. And I think Motter does this better than, say, another writer I could mention, Alan Moore, who attempted to do the same thing.
I think Terminal City is a, I'm potentially committing heresy here, I think Terminal City is a better and more realized world than the Legion of Super, or the Legion of
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, that's good for what it is, but this is something all its own, and it uses those references in very creative and very unique ways,
and non-pretentious ways.
Yes, it just you they weren't. He wasn't just waving a flag saying, "Look at this, I'm smart."
Right. You don't have to go running to your literary dictionary to figure out who's who or get the references. And if you don't get the references,
it doesn't matter because he's telling a good story.
It could, because it passes you by. Whereas not getting the references in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen seriously hurts your ability to even understand what's going on.
Yes, I agree. This is really fascinating just work. I am so glad you recommended this, because this is something I've always wanted to read, and I feel like I've been missing out the last decade or so. I should have been reading this a long time ago.
I mean, it even has like the old cliffhangers. You know, you have high flying adventure, you have a wacky boxing match where a boxer has to go up against monkeys. Lots and lots of monkeys, you know, including the Missing Link and the Yeti, and Yeti's not a monkey, but, you know, all the stages of evolution. One of the great plot points is Cosmo Quinn is disgraced, and a lot of his fellow performers, because he was a performer, you know, he was a tight wire or a tightrope walker and a building climber, and Monty Vickers was the great adventurer who would go on adventures and bring back exotic animals and things like that. Kid Gloves, who was also part of their group, was framed in a boxing match to make it seem like he took a fall. And so he has this great moment where he becomes, where he is...
redeemed.
Redeemed, thank you. Yeah. Such an easy word. Where he is redeemed as he fights his way, an entire boxing match where he fights his way through literally the stages of human evolution.
Yeah, he fights from the very bottom.
All the way up to the Missing Link.
And eventually does fight a Rock'em Sock'em robot, which is...
Rock'em Sock'em robot.
Yeah, and I love the way these old... Sorry. I love the way these old characters are all the adventurer, the adventurers of Daring Do that you'd see in the old serials and whatnot. The old, you know, movie serials.
But to clarify that it's not... The comic is not just about nostalgia. It's actually, a lot of it is because many of these characters are nostalgic, and it is a comment on nostalgia as well as, so I don't want to present it to anyone listening as this is just an old timey throwback.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a critique of nostalgia.
Right.
I mean, it does embrace it in many ways, but it also shows how people's fascination with the past can lead to an abandonment of the future, you know, stagnation and an inability to move forward. So, you know, so it goes both ways. It does embrace that nostalgic past, but it also shows you the downside of living there.
Right. And I mean, it's hard to condense this into just a simple podcast, which is why I think everyone should go out and buy it, read it. It's actually available currently. The entire Terminal City, including Aerial Graffiti, is available now on Dark Horse as the complete Terminal City, and that's COMPLEAT, of course. So the plug is over. I will collect my millions from Dark Horse for that plug.
It's absolutely brilliant. See, I usually buy my comics digitally. That's just how I roll. But I went out and got a hard copy of this because it's a beautiful, beautiful book. you know, I think you just need to have that physicality of holding it in your hand.
Well, it's real purdy on the shelf too.
Yeah. Indeed.
But, and speaking of purdy, Michael Lark, of course, this is one of his earliest works.
Right. Now, I primarily know Michael Lark from his run on Captain America.
With Ed, that's Brubaker. Right. I forgot to mention the Captain America run, but.
Yeah. Well, that's where I first heard of him. So it was neat seeing some of his earlier work and seeing how he evolves later in his career. But he's on point right now. The artwork in this is great.
You know? And it should be, you have to almost see like what he has done, particularly, as I said in the intro, the city itself is a character unto itself. I mean, you have the cast iron beach, you have the Colossus of Rhodes, R-O-A-D-S.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Herculean Arms itself, Rick's Atomic Cafe. There's your, you know, part of your Casablanca nod.
There's the big Promethean head.
The big Promethean head. I mean, it's very Art Deco.
Yes. Well, is this? I don't know if this is actually a genre or not. I mean, it's not steampunk. Is it retro future? You know, it's that 1920s Art Nouveau. You know,
Motter himself, referring to it as sort of neo or retro futuristic.
Okay, retro futuristic.
So it is that mixture of it. It's not steampunk,
but it has that element of, you know, the old Art Nouveau aesthetic with futuristic elements on top of it, like Metropolis, yes, or Things to Come, and you know, has that look and feel.
And I should have mentioned Metropolis as another touch point, but and I think, not just the gorgeous art that Michael Lark puts into the city, we would be remiss in not mentioning all of the non-speaking, the crowd at the Herculean Arms. I know there's basically a ton of cameos. None of them, you know, they just appear for a panel in crowd scenes. Off the top of my head, Death. Sandman's Death is in there.
Oh, I can see that.
The Invisible Man is in there. Mm-hmm. Freud is in there. Lamont Cranston, the Shadow, is there. There's hundreds more.
Yeah, it's kind of like a 1920s Sgt. Pepper cover.
Exactly.
They're just everywhere scattered.
It's blink and you miss it because they're all in the background, some of them very far in the background. But it's the way that Lark sort of helps create this Herculean Arms as, like I said, the Grand Hotel or Casablanca again, where it is this massive meeting place where all sort of people are gathered. And it's just, it's really keenly done.
Oh, yeah. A lot of care and thought went into every panel, every page. Even things like choice of color.
Yes.
Was brilliant. Like when there's some fight scenes and the background will go all red to show that it's, you know, the danger and the hyper violence that's going on. It's incredibly well done. And like I said, a lot of thought went into crafting this whole piece.
this weird moment. It's the weird moment where we stop and pause because of the 500 things that we can't talk about. We have to narrow it down to 3 or 4.
Exactly.
And it's like, where do we go from here?
What's the name of the artist? His name is what?
Oh,
yes. What's the name of the artist?
One of the best. When I was saying, you know, earlier with one of the plot points, the literal question of art.
Yes.
And it's this great. Do you want to talk about it, Paul? Because this is kind of
great. I mean, it's a parody of Who's On First with an artist named What, right? Or What.
And this is done by the two brothers, Mikasa and Tsukasa.
And it just keeps running on throughout the entire series.
They are looking to either steal or purchase a piece of art by this artist named What.
Yeah. And what does he paint? Yes. His name is Watt? Of course. Yes, it is. It's Who Was On First all the way through.
And it's subtle. Well, it's not subtle.
No, it made me smile the whole time.
Yes, it exists throughout. I mean, it's just little, like, two-panel scenes in every comic where they're still going on about it. And instead of getting old, it gets more hilarious the longer it goes, which is rare.
Right, and there's so many things. And, you know, like you mentioned the puns.
Yeah.
I just wrote down a handful of the ones I really liked. Like, They're looking for a woman with no leg. Oh, you mean Peggy? One that I don't know if any if a lot of people picked up on it. They go to a steam room at one point, and it's called Jaybirds. So they're all naked as a Jaybird.
It doesn't push it. It lets you come to it. And some of the names, Lance Boyle.
Exactly. Some of those are kind of overt. Yeah.
Yeah. Charity Ball.
Charity Ball.
I just had this open here, but I wrote. Oh, the Captain Otto Rex.
Yes. Oh, that stuff is just. Oh, that's just so great.
You know, and it's just, there's so many of them, but again, it's, I keep stressing this, but it's subtle enough that it doesn't hurt. It doesn't make you groan. I mean, I'm looking for a couple of the other ones.
Well, there's a robot named XLNC, Excellency.
Yes. Oliver DeMapp.
Oliver DeMapp.
Sir Talbot Short. Sir Talbot Short.
Sir Talbot Short. Ah, oh, there's just so many.
And it's the wealth of characters, because all of these characters actually are real, believable characters.
Oh yeah, everyone is fleshed. There's no one who's just thrown in there. Everyone has, you know, everyone has a real personality. Everyone has a backstory and a story to tell. They're not just throwaway.
And one of the other great like extended pieces is Captain Habib. Who is basically Captain Ahab.
Exactly.
And so many jokes throughout the, you know, because a Little Big Lil, who is the sort of the big bad in the series, is a short, slightly chubby woman who is all white.
Yes. She's an albino.
And she and Captain Habib have clearly a long standing, she is his nemesis. She is his great white whale, literally.
Yeah.
And his obsession with her is, I mean, it's Moby Dick.
Yeah. Well, that's what gets back to Modern knows his stuff. You know, if you didn't read Moby Dick or didn't know Moby Dick, it's still a good, you know, it's a good subplot.
And you would probably still get it.
Yeah, you'd probably still get it. But he's not hitting you over the head with it. I guess he is, but.
Yeah. There's that great, you know, pun, or that's not a pun, but that great where the sergeant, Otto Rex, I think tells Habib to harpoon her or something. And, you know, there's a great scene Michael Lark draws where you just see like this look of pain on Habib's face.
Oh yes. It's really good. And then there's the woman in red, Carmen Sandiego.
Yes.
That's what I kept thinking of when I saw that character. It's just like
his real name might be Monique, but again, that's one of those plot points that is left open. And folks should be aware that it doesn't, there are plot points that don't resolve again. And there are red herrings throughout and
they don't need to. That's kind of the thing, you know, it's entertaining all the way through. And even when you comes to a dead end, it's still kind of fun to get to that dead end.
Well, because it leaves you wanting to get, you know, the next series.
Right.
And I think, like I said, Mater, I think wanted to continue, but through a variety of reasons he wasn't able to.
Is he still working? I mean, I know him as an illustrator.
Right. He does album covers.
Right.
As design. And every couple of years we get a new Mr. X series by Motter. And Mr. X was my entry point to Dean Motter. Mr. X has been a long running series, and it shares a lot of similarities with Terminal City. Mm-hmm. In that Mr. X works, it's also all about architecture, and Mr. X works in a place called Radiant City. And Radiant City does share some similarities with Terminal City. Mater does revisit, in Terminal City, he is revisiting some of his themes from Mr. X, including like the somnambulists, the Escher, the people with the Escher syndrome.
Yes.
That's another great part of Terminal City is the folks with Escher syndrome who are walking, like defying gravity and walking, you know, outside, like sideways on a building.
Yeah. And that's so fun too, because they mentioned this, and then throughout the series, you just see a scene going on and there'll be someone on the side of a building walking sideways on a building. They're not telling you that.
Right.
You're just, you know, it's just always there in the background.
And it's just explained, and not even really explained. It's just, they refer to it, I think, once as Escher syndrome. and it's just kind of dropped in the middle of some other conversation, and you know, there you are.
Yeah, and there exactly. So is Mr. X, is it a shared universe? Are they, is it the same or is it not?
There has been, I'm going back to something I remember Motter saying, as I can't cite it, but...
Oh, this is the internet. You can just make stuff up.
I could, that's right. Yeah, you know. unfortunately, there may be fact checkers out there.
What, on the internet?
There, Motter has said at some point in the past, in an interview I read with him, that it is a shared, there is the possibility that it could be a shared universe.
Okay. Well, good.
So it would be very interesting to see how, like, if he was ever, the problem is, of course, you know, these aren't high selling comic books, you know, Wolverine or Deadpool are not in them, or Batman. So the guy's got to make money and he can't just write for fun. So,
which is a shame.
So whether it be financially viable for him to revisit Terminal City in a way that also brings in Radiant City, I don't know. It would be great. I would purchase it.
Well, I would buy
the floppies and the hardcover and the paperback and the digital just to give the man money.
I think that everybody out there listening to this should go out and buy the complete edition, and we can demand that there should be more Terminal City.
Yes.
We need another run.
Let's kickstart it.
Let's do it.
We could start a Kickstarter completely without Dean Motter.
And then just say, okay, now you got the money to go do it.
And then just send him some money, send him the money and say, hey, we did this. And I'm sure he would really, really appreciate us. You know,
it's too bad that
his career to him.
I mean, this 14 issue, you know, complete run is really just so much fun. I can't recommend it enough.
And again, to stress, it's not just like we're picking out some of the more humorous bits, but it is a serious story.
Oh yeah.
And it is,
there's some pretty tragic stuff that happens in here.
Yes. I mean, poor Mayor Huxley. I won't go into the full details for people who haven't read it yet, but, of course, Mayor Huxley, which is great. And the mayor before him, which was Mayor Orwell. And it was Mayor Orwell who was the mayor when they had the brand new world's fair, which is what kind of started everything. Again, you'd have to read it to find out exactly, but you know, you Mayor Huxley, Mayor Orwell, but yeah, poor Mayor Huxley, he has a difficult time in this series.
that's really
horrible and you know,
yeah, that's putting it lightly. He has a really
it's
bad
really
time.
Horrible.
Because every time I would turn a page. Every time I turn a page and go, oh, no, not again.
And we're playing coy, I think, at this point. But, you know, again, it's just the plotting of it.
Yeah. Well, there's so many nice...
tightly plotted it is.
Yeah, and there's so many nice little... Like the older actress and actor who meet each other. And it's just a little tiny plot that's going on in the hotel.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Busey Fields and Lance Boyle.
Exactly.
The old-timey actors.
Yeah, they're just so sweet that they've kind of find each other, and that's sort of happening off to the side. There's so much going on. There's so it's a very, very rich world that Motter created.
And I think that's one of the great things about it is it's the richness of the world, as you just said. Let me repeat exactly what you said word for word.
Absolutely. We got to pad the time somehow.
Both visually Yeah, both visually and in the writing and in the characterization and in the plot and the myriad of plots.
Yeah, it's so well done.
I feel like, again, apologies to our listeners. I feel like I've just basically selected something so I can cheerlead.
And that's fine. This is something that's brilliant. So
yeah. It's a series that I do care a lot about. So I probably am a little less cynical as I normally am in podcasts sometimes, but
no, it's okay to like things and just be on board.
It's okay to let people like things.
Well, okay. Yeah. I find, and you know, to get on my soapbox a little bit, I find that criticism today usually begins with the negative. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, people start by hating something or finding things to hate in something, and it never or I could say never, but it's very rare when you find someone who just goes in and says, this is really good and I'm going to tell you why, you know, and this is really good and we just told you why.
And
well, at least I hope we did.
I mean, to me, Terminal City is what comics should be about.
Absolutely.
It has it has everything. Heroics, murder, violence, love. It has Fawlty Tower references.
No, it's got humor. It's got romance. It's everything you need. And everything is portrayed beautifully by Michael Lark's art. You know, it's a joy to read, and it's just wonderful just to look at.
Yeah.
You know, it's an all-around brilliant book.
I think it's sort of a shame that comics like this have kind of fallen by the wayside. I know that there are people who swear by this comic. I know that it is beloved by a group of people. And I know, like, Dean Motter's work in general with Mr. X and some of the other stuff. I think he did The Prisoner. So I know that his work is beloved by a group of people. And I know Michael Lark, of course, has had great success as an artist. But I feel like this is why comics exist. This particular series is... go ahead.
No, I think this should be up in the pantheon of great comics. When people list greatest comics ever written, this should be up there.
Sure.
In that top 10 list, you know.
I mean, I know people are going to throw, you know, it's not going to beat Watchmen in a list. It's not going to beat Sandman in a list. You know, it's certain arcs in the Avengers or certain arcs in Batman or whatever. I get that those are, you know, sort of status changers.
Yeah.
So, and this isn't a status changer. It's just really good comics.
It's what comics does best, done really well, if that makes any sense at all.
Yes. And, you know, there's time will not allow, like I said earlier, to get to everything about this comic and all of the little things in it. But gee willikers, Paul.
It's very good. And I thank you so much for recommending this, because this is something I should have read a long time ago. And I'm just happy that I have it now.
Do you think I either could go on for another 2 hours, or we could call it.
I think we can just call it there.
Buy this comic. If you read it and disagree with us, let us know why. Let me know why, because I would be curious.
Yeah, I would love to know if someone doesn't like this.
Yeah.
I'd be really curious as to know why. Yeah. And if you do love this comic, tell us that too. And as always, love to hear your feedback. And we actually have a new Twitter handle that you can actually contact us on. It's at CollectedEdPod. So Collected EDPOD. And you can contact us with your feedback. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Ask us a question.
Ooh,
anything you like.
We should open... Hey, we would be more than happy to answer listeners' questions.
Absolutely. I don't know how well we'd be at that, but love to do it.
Ask us anything.
All right, Brian. Should we wrap this up?
I think we should wrap this up.
We'll do it next time?
We will return with sarcasm and cynicism in our next episode.
Will we? Will we, though?
Probably not. So, Paul, now that we've covered Terminal City in this podcast, it's time to talk about what we're going to do in our next podcast.
Well, next time on the podcast, we'll be covering Tomb of Dracula Volume 2.
Ooh, that sounds Halloween-y.
Yes, it is. Halloween-y. This is the classic series from Marvel with writer Marv Wolfman and art by Gene Colan. This volume includes issues 13 to 23 of Tomb of Dracula and features the origin of a very jive-talking Blade the Vampire Hunter, plus a lot of other 70s goodness. I'd be very interested to hear what you have to say about this, Mr. Brian, because I know you've never read any Tomb of Dracula.
I have not read Tomb of Dracula.
Okay. I'm going to really try to get this done and released on or around Halloween. But if it comes out a little bit later, what are you going to do?
We'll give you your money back.
Exactly. It's a free podcast, people. Deal with it. But this was a lot of fun talking about Terminal City. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thanks for stopping by.
All right. Keep reading comics, everybody.
Be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at the Daddy Elk Productions handle @DaddyElk and use the hashtag Collected Edition. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Well, I didn't go to college with a football program, but but as an Ohio boy, you know, I've got
the Ohio State University.
Yeah, the Ohio State.
Having been having gone to art school, we didn't have a huge football program.
Really?
It's true.
Sad.
Yeah. So in art school, all of our all of our sporting events were a draw. Ended in a draw. There you go. I can work that joke out. To work that one out a little bit.